You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. What will it take to pull Michigan schools out of the mire of middling to poor student achievement? Michigan students now score among the bottom tier of states nationally on the National Assessment of Educational Progress exams. That's just one measure. States that once trailed Michigan's educational performance are now leaving our kids in their dust. What's working elsewhere that could improve Michigan schools? That's the question Bridge Magazine tackled in a series of reports entitled The Smartest Kids in the Nation, done by Bridge writers Ron French and Chastity Pratt Dossie. Ron and Chastity, so good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Chastity, you explored four states, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Florida, and Tennessee. Why did you and Ron pick those four?
Well, we picked states with schools that were achieving at levels that, you know, were either at a fast rate of progress or they were at the top of the game. And we also wanted to make sure that we went to states where there were Democrats and then some states that were Republican. We didn't want to just go to the Democratic states or just go to the Republican states. So that would open up people's eyes here in Michigan and you know, just keep the conversation clean of, you know,
partisanship,
any partisanship or any, you know, people accusing us of being biased.
And you find that in these states, generally, the states that are successful, education is a nonpartisan issue as opposed to the way we see it in Michigan.
Definitely.
And two of these states were really rocking it anyway, right? And then two of them have come from way behind Michigan to really lap us.
Well, Massachusetts, it's kind of that state that's become the darling of school reform in the nation. Everybody talks about Massachusetts because a generation ago, they were in the middle of the pack, right, with Michigan neck and neck on some national standards. And now they're way clearly ahead of everyone. And what they did was they really said, look, you know, they took that look in the mirror, right, Ron? And they said, this is not good enough.
And what you find in Minnesota is the same sort of thing where it's Minnesota. It's a Midwestern state.
Great Lakes state like us?
Sure. You know, if you just think about it, you know, as a layman, you would think, what the heck would they have going for them that Michigan does not? But they lead the nation in math. They are top 10 in every category you can imagine. So they've done something right. And so we have that in Massachusetts to look at to see, you know, these very high achieving states, very different, but they're doing something right.
And Florida and Tennessee?
Florida and Tennessee both had scores lower than Michigan 10 years ago. Their scores are still sort of in the middle of the pack. But what you've seen over the past decade is just a fast rise in academic achievement as opposed to Michigan, where in a lot of the categories we have just tread water or even lost ground in some instances. So those are good examples of states that were struggling, just like Michigan, but they found some way to fix it.
Well, I want to break this down into areas that have triggered a lot of debate here in Michigan, sometimes controversy and bitter disagreement, and see what we can learn. Let's start with spending, with that lifeblood of money. How do the four states compare with Michigan in terms of just how much money they spend on K through 12 education, Chastity?
Well, there's a very, you know, amounts. You know, some spend more, some spend less. It's not so much how much they spend, it's how they spend it. You have them putting their money where their priorities are. You have them investing more in low-income students and students who are on the bad end of the achievement gap. And in Massachusetts, for instance, they, in 1993, with their whole Reform Act, they said, okay, look, we're going to make our standards tougher and we're going to fund the children who need the most attention. They came up with 19 different factors for how they would fund different schools. And they really said, okay, students who have special needs, students who are low income and come to school with more needs, we're going to give them more. So they weighted their student funding. So the kids who need more get more.
And around here, Tennessee and Florida actually spend less than Michigan? And they're getting these incredible rates of improvement.
Notably less than Michigan. Minnesota spends about the same and get a lot better student achievement. Florida and Tennessee spend pretty remarkably less. Their teachers are paid a lot less. But the way we look at it is when you see that those states are spending less and Massachusetts is spending more, what we look at is that it, probably spending is not the key. As Chastity said, it's really how you spend it. What you found, for example, in Florida is that they routed some money in different directions, that they decided the third grade reading was going to be a big priority for them. and they just stuck a boatload of money. It wasn't new money. They just changed where the money was going. They took a boatload of money and put it into both intervention and for teacher training in the early grades.
How about teacher salaries in these states?
Well, Massachusetts spends a lot. I think they're like at the top of the pile. They're spending on their teachers. And again, it's the same thing. You're going to see a varied response or just, you know, results as far as, you know, teacher salary. Some spend more, some spend less. But in Massachusetts, they said, okay, look, we want teachers to be better at teaching. And so I don't think the salaries are as important as the training that they're investing in
and
these states.
That's exactly where I wanted to go next. I wanted to find out what you found in these four states about teacher training and professional development, and also how smoothly all that came about, because I'm wondering if there was resistance when reforms needed to be made.
As far as training goes, that's one of the things that was consistent between these states. All of them put a lot of emphasis on actually giving training to their teachers once they get into the classroom, as opposed to just handing them the keys and saying, good luck for the next 40 years. What you find in Tennessee over the past several years have provided state-sponsored, state-funded training for 70,000 of their teachers. And those teachers then go back into their own schools and become the teacher leaders for those schools. The number that have in Michigan that have received state-sponsored, state-funded Common Core training, zero.
And that's a major difference. Investing in teachers and supporting teachers is probably one of the biggest differences between Michigan and these other states. They're investing in training them in the Common Core, which is the direction that all these states and Michigan, you know, have agreed. We're going to go with the Common Core standards. And these states have said, well, okay, we're going to train our teachers in the Common Core standards. And there's going to be, you know, consistent across the state. We've not done that here in Michigan. So it's like giving the teachers this mandate and telling the schools individually will figure out how to get it done.
And that's what we've done in Michigan.
Definitely.
We're talking with Bridge Magazine writers Ron French and Chastity Pratt Dawsey. Their series of reports called The Smartest Kids in the Nation explore K through 12 education in Massachusetts, Minnesota, Florida, and Tennessee, four states with high performing or fast improving schools. Students in these four states are making great strides in their schooling, while Michigan students are still mired in middling to poor test scores. So what can we learn from them? Let's talk about getting an early start. Now, Governor Snyder's made early childhood education a big priority with the Great Readiness Program. I'm wondering how this effort in Michigan compares and contrasts with what's happening, especially in Minnesota and Florida.
Right. That's a very good point. Here in Michigan, we have made a big investment over the last couple of years in our preschool program, which is for our low and moderate income families to get their kids into preschool programs at age of four. That's fantastic.
Commendable. Very commendable.
Very commendable. What you see in Minnesota is a program that takes that exponentially farther. They have a preschool program, but they also have a program that is unique in the nation, which they say is maybe a key factor for why Minnesota's scores are so good all the way through school. They have a program for 0 to 4. Okay. Now, this doesn't mean that a newborn is sitting in a classroom for 8 hours a day.
Right.
But it does mean that families, anytime they want between birth and the time they enter kindergarten, can sign up for classes. And what it is 90 minutes a week. And you go in with your kid, and the parent has to be there. Now, what makes this program unique is the parent part of this, because what they do is this is all by certified teachers that are, you know, specializing in this area.
This is not a play group.
This is not a play group, no. But they teach the parents how to become their child's first teacher. They teach them how to play and how to do things that is intellectually correct for the age of their child. And what that does is helps the parents learn how to prepare the kids so that when they go to preschool and kindergarten, they're ready. It's not all that costly, but no one else does it, and it's something I think a lot of states should look at.
Money-wise, you say it's not that costly.
Not really.
Yeah.
Not. You know, it's a few hundred dollars per kid because it's only 90 minutes long. But it's something that, you know, it takes a lot of infrastructure, but it's something they've done for 40 years in Minnesota.
Talking about testing, you put lots of effort into your series looking at testing in these four states. And one striking example showed that it's not all kumbaya and sweetness and light as these reforms were made, and that's the Massachusetts Comprehensive Assessment System exam. What happened when it was first given in 1998?
Well, it wasn't a pretty picture, quite honestly. Students, they didn't do well. They gave it to 4th, 8th, and 10th graders, and they said that this test is going to be a test that you're going to have to pass in a 10th grade to graduate. In that first year, I think something like 27% of kids passed. And yeah, imagine wow. imagine if 27% of our kids passed the MME in Michigan, it would be an enormous backlash. I'm just assuming.
Yes. But and there was in Massachusetts.
Yeah, people said, "Oh wait, this is something's wrong with the test." The NAACP said the kids of color are going to be left behind. They're not going to graduate. We can't. This is no. Stop. Wait.
I can totally imagine this all being said and then some in Michigan.
There was total backlash. Yeah. But the surprising and interesting thing was that Massachusetts said, okay, they're not doing well. We're going to give them a few years to figure out this in the classroom with the teachers before we really make it required for graduation. And they stuck with the test. And today, most kids are passing it on their first time. They get to take it over and over. Mm-hmm. But most kids are passing it on their first time in Massachusetts. They stuck with it.
And then taking that out, you look at the fact that Massachusetts scores the way the brightest countries elsewhere.
This is a difficult test that they're giving in Massachusetts starting in the 90s. And it's so difficult that it's helping to prepare kids there to take these international tests. And in our series in Bridge Magazine, we point out that if Massachusetts were a country, they'd be scoring second in eighth grade science on the Thames. So they're doing something right. It's a really tough test. They stuck with it, and it's paying dividends.
And it sounds like it's kind of a theme that runs through your entire series, The Smarter Kids in the Nation. Teachers and the kids rise to whatever tough standard is set with the right support.
With the right support.
Right. Set your expectations high and make those expectations clear. What I heard among a lot of teachers I spoke to was that whether you like the standards or not, it's very clear what we're supposed to do, what every kid is supposed to learn by the end of third grade, by the end of fourth grade. And that allows teachers to focus on the actual teaching in the classroom, as opposed to every year wondering, oh my goodness, how is the test changing this year? What's going to happen? If you set standards, keep them there, and make them clear that so that everyone understands, it really can go a long way.
And support. You have to support the teachers.
Exactly.
You have to train the teachers. You have to help them to help the kids. Teachers appreciate that, and they stick with you and work with you through the process.
How about charter schools? How much of a presence do charter schools have in these four states you studied?
All the states have them. All the states at different degrees again, but they all have the charter schools, but they are not governed in a way that we govern ours here in Michigan. And they have different achievement levels. Massachusetts, again, having really successful.
Is there more accountability?
Schools. There's extremely high standards and way more accountability.
And mechanisms to get rid of schools that don't perform
very
well.
Very definitely.
And
their idea is that charter schools are created to be high-achieving schools, and if they're not, they'll close them down. That's not our vision for charter schools in Michigan. We look at them, the law sets them up as a choice. There's no expectation or standard that they are supposed to be high-achieving.
What we found also is it's a lot like the amount of money you spend overall in K-12. It's a lot like your teacher salaries. Charters are a big issue here in Michigan that we argue over all the time. But when you look at these high-achieving states, that doesn't seem to be the factor. It's not like the states with the most charters or the least charters are the highest. It's the accountability for those charters that seem to make a difference.
And I want to wrap up by talking about reform, because looking at all four states that you profiled, so as we look at Minnesota and Florida and Massachusetts and Tennessee, it took a lot of reform and a lot of change to get to the success they're having. Who triggered the push? Is there a theme that you saw amongst the four?
Yeah, it was always, in each of these cases, entities outside of the educational sphere. You had business leaders coming and saying, look, you're not going to get very far in your economy with this sort of academic achievement in your state. And they team up with, politicians and, researchers and educators and youth. Everyone, eventually gets on board with the reform movement in these states.
And are we seeing that in Michigan? I mean, we've heard voices of discontent from the business community about we aren't getting what we need. But is it a strong enough voice to push reform through?
I think we have a start here, Cynthia. If you look at how business leaders got together and really pushed and were the driving force behind increased funding for our preschool program, looking at and saying, you know, we need over the long term for our talent to be better. And the way we do that is through better K-12 education. And the way that's going to happen is get to these kids early. If we could then marshal those same forces for a larger reform than just preschool, I think we could make some progress here.
Sometimes perspective is a very good thing. I'm wondering what you heard from officials in the other states as they look at Michigan and what they have to say about our approach to K-12 education.
They're saying, look, you know, it has to be a joint effort. And this bickering, the Republicans want this, the Democrats want that, it's going to get you nowhere. How do you end it, Ron? You got to go big or go home?
Go big or go home. That's what someone said in Tennessee. This is something one governor, a former governor of Tennessee, said. This is something that has to be stuck with through three governors, four governors, five governors. You can't be changing every time a political party changes. There has to be nonpartisan enough that everyone sees the importance of this and they stick with it. It's clarity and willing to stick with some tough reforms.
It has to be that sacred issue that nobody messes with for their own political purposes.
And it makes you just wonder, could we ever see that day in Michigan where all the niff-gnawing and the finger-pointing and the partisan divides could ease up in order to pursue this common goal?
The bigger question is, can we afford not to? Where we are in our unemployment, where we are in our economy, we're at the bottom in those measures as well. Can we afford to ignore this? Can we afford to not do anything? It seems like we can only afford to do something big now.
Absolutely. What you find a lot in these states is that there is a moment of clarity, that they looked in the mirror. Another state said it was like a deer in the headlights. There was a moment where they said, oh, my gosh, we have to fix this now. It's almost like having a minor heart attack and saying, I have to change my way of life. This is what has to happen. And the question is whether Michigan realizes they've had that deer in the headlights moment.
Chastity Pratt-Dossi and Ron French with Bridge Magazine and their series, The Smartest Kids in the Nation, can be found at bridgemi.com. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.